So let's continue about the bottom-up methods. Okay, so bottom-up application. So this means that we take basically small pieces and put them together to make a bigger species. And obvious, there's basically three different basic ideas. I think in chemical synthesis, which is here, this you discussed already quite a lot with Kaisa, I assume. Then there's a self-assemble, which means usually that you use weak interactions. In a chemical synthesis, you modify strong interactions, so covalent bonds. And here in a self-assemble, you use weak bonds. And then you can do atom by atom. And we will see what that means. So basically what we have now been discussing is this kind of a traditionally physics view of world. So you make connections by lithography, microfabrication, and you are pushing it to smaller and smaller to the nanoscale. With Kaisa, you already talked about some chemical reactions, so they are usually in angstrom scale. So one angstrom is 0.1 nanometer. And you are making bigger structures, bottom-up style, ending up to the same size category than the top-down. So at the moment, the top-down and bottom-up are all dealing in the same dimensions in a nanoscale, and you can combine the methods. And then comes biology, just to tell, yeah, that nature invented this already millions of years ago. Nothing new here. So all the biological molecules are exactly in this nanoscale, nanometer scale. And we can actually combine those in our structures, and not just combine, but we can take advantage of those and use them. Ways nature maybe not intended originally, but still very handy and useful ways. So there's a atomic manipulation by STM. So this is cunning tunneling microscope. I will tell more about that in when we are talking about our scanning probe microscope. But what it has a very tiny tip. So kind of usually you have this bending thing, and then you have a very tiny tip which ends to one atom, and then you can move atoms on the surface just by pushing by that tip. And there's this IBM logo, legendary, made from xenon atoms. Later it's done also by AFM. And then there's another, so here's a IBM logo, so you can see how it is constructed, moving by xenon atoms. And here is the iron atoms made on a circle on top of iron, bulk iron. As you can see here, when you form this full circle, you see waves here. Any idea what are those waves? Have you made a splash on your iron? It's in a solid form.
Electron
bands. Yeah, this is very much the correct answer. Electron bands was the answer, if online didn't hear. So these are exactly the orbits, quantum mechanical orbits, and now they are formed together by this ring. And STM is actually a method where you can look orbits. So this is how you see that a quantum mechanical plays a role. Here you can see only lattice of atoms, and then these extra atoms at the top. But as soon as you make the ring of them, you make this kind of a combined state. Okay, there's one example of chemical synthesis. I don't think we need to go to very much in the details in that. So you just start with something and take your conditions. Yeah, conditions, correct. Sorry, word missing. So you make your reaction conditions correct, so 80 degrees, and we were combined with this kind of compound, and then you have a chemical reaction happening. And then you have two choices, what kind of conditions you do. You end up either to this or this kind of molecule. But these are all breaking covalent bonds, so this needs a lot of energy. That's why usually higher temperatures also. But then, simplest example of self-assemble is this so-called SAMs, self-assembled monolayers. And this is the very basic idea, is that you have this kind of molecule, you see here. It has a carbon hydrate tail. It can be whatever length, and it can have a bent rings or not. But at the other end, you have a so-called thiol group, which means that you have a sulfur and hydrogen. And this thiol group is kind of special, that it very easily kicks off this hydrogen, and you have one dangling bond there, and which very well attached to the gold atom. So this means that if you have a gold surface and you throw in solution with these molecules, they all want to attach to gold. And finally, at some point, you get all your gold covered by these molecules. But since they had this organic tail, second layer of molecules cannot anymore attach, because sulfur doesn't attach to this hydrocarbon tail. So you have exactly single layer of molecules. And then you can play, you can put some end group to make it reactive or something else at the here end, and so on. So this is a simple self-assembled structure. Then nowadays, one very common method, it is kind of a, it's counted as a bottom up, but it doesn't very much divide from a chemical vapor deposition we saw in the previous lecture, it was top down. So this is the same idea. You put chemicals to the chamber, they react, they form a film. But now you do it not just throwing everything in, but you put first chemical first, then you put the second one. So first chemical kind of fills the surface, so it makes this exactly this kind of a self-assembled monolayer on a surface. Then you put a second gas in, it reacts with the first one to make a solid film. Then you start all over, you put the first gas again, it makes again self-assembled monolayer, then you put a second gas and so on. So you kind of repeat this kind of cycle. And every cycle you make one molecule layer. So that's why atomic layer deposition, so you make one layer of molecules at a time. And you can count the thickness easily. If you made of five cycles, then you have a five layers of molecules. So there's one example. So you make a zinc chloride with a sulfur dihydrate, yeah. And you react with those, you make zinc sulfur and HCl, which is actually gas or liquid at least. So first you put this zinc chloride, which makes a monolayer here. Then you actually purge it away You put a huge flow of nitrogen and every gas out. Then you only have this zinc chloride here at the surface. Then you put this sulfur hydroxide in and it reacts with this first compound to make a zinc sulfide layer. And then your byproduct is this hydrochloride acid. And then you purge again all gases and byproducts out and you have a single layer. Then you start all over. You put a layer of a zinc chloride on top of this, then you purge and so on. So this is a basic idea of atomic layer deposition. And since you can do, one comment. So usually we talk about molecular beam epitaxy where you can make a single crystals. If you really carefully tune this, you can also do single crystals, but usually not. Molecular beam epitaxy is better for that, but that's even more slow than this. And basically this is bottom up because you make a layer by layer. And you can easily make this kind of structures. So you combine different materials because every cycle you can change a material, of course. So there's a lot of this kind of material which are now tailor-made. So these kind of nanolaminates, modified materials, you have basically doping layers or graded structures, meaning that your titanium carbide is gradually changing to titanium nitride. So not single interface here, but smoothly going, or you have a tailored mixture. One of the most common thing is this. This is a transmission electron microscope. So really high resolution electron microscope image. So you can even see single silicon atoms here in a crystal. And then this is from transistor. So here you have oxide layer and here you have your metal. So in a transistor, you basically have your channel where current flows. Then you have a insulating layer. And then you have a metal here where you can put a voltage to control how much current you flow. And this channel is usually grounded at some point. So this is a basic idea of a transistor. So you use voltage, how much current you drive through. So to make transistor work best, you need this capacitance. So from electronics course, you know, capacitance is a metal insulator metal, so they are not connected. And you have a capacitance, which is basically area of your plate divided by distance of this plate. So this is D, and area is a area of the plate. And then you have a dielectric constant there somewhere. It's actually here. Yeah. So now you want your transistor to be quicker, which means you have, then it needs high capacitance. How to make high capacitance? Big area. No, you want your 5 million transistor in this small piece. You cannot make them bigger, you want to make them smaller. How to make it bigger then is to make it thinner. The oxide layer very thin. And traditionally, this oxide here was silicon dioxide. Of course, because your channel was silicon and you a little bit oxidize it, you make a silicon dioxide layer on top of that, very easy. That's why it was used. But now you start make your transistor smaller and smaller and you want high capacitance still. This means that you want to make it thinner and thinner. And at one point, about 10 years ago, it started to be like a 2 molecules, the thickness. So as you can imagine, 2 molecules is not very good insulator anymore. So it started to leak like a hell, and this means that your transistor is heating up and nothing works. So that was kind of the end of the optimization or a thickness. You have to invent something else. You increase dielectric constant. So you change the material. So that's why this silicon dioxide was changed to hafnium dioxide. That has at least double times the dielectric constant. So you can increase your thickness back so that it's really insulating and you still get your high capacitor. And also hafnium dioxide is actually only possible way to fabricate this is by atomic layer deposition. So you also get very good coverage because it's made by molecule, so there's no holes. So this is a place where this atomic layer deposition is nowadays used all the time. So all the processor has nowadays hafnium dioxide as the insulator. And another place is that you, as was shown there, you can make these thin layers of different materials very easily. And what are these good? These are very good for Bragg mirrors or these kind of filters in optics. Because if these layer thicknesses are exactly square of the wavelength of your light, the light cannot pass through. So you can select certain wavelengths which don't go through and other wavelengths will go through. For example, here is one transmittance curve. So you can see that the wavelengths from 1570 something, four maybe, till 1590 will go through and everything else will be cut off. So this one has 200 layers. So it takes a little bit time to fabricate it, layer by layer in the ALD. But total thickness is still only about 45 microns. Okay, but then if you go to self-assemble, there's a huge amount of choices. I just took this kind of a copolymer self-assembly where you have this small polymer, it's so-called block copolymer, where you can combine other molecules to each block, and then they organize to this kind of a cylinders. Or then you can make a porous material in other conditions, or even this kind of hairy rods. And this all happens by themselves. So if you're really interested in details of this, you can go to the read this article. It's Olli Ikkala from Helsinki. But this is already old. But this was one of the first ones. But if you think self-assembly in a nature, you take a DNA, everyone has a DNA in every cell, protein folding, viral assembly, so viruses. And in a nature, this is kind of a, in biological processes, all this self-assembly happens in a weak bond, as I mentioned earlier. And why is that? If we would have a covalent bond, for example, protein folding, you know, protein is this kind of chain of amino acids. It then falls to this alpha chirals or beta sheets, these kind of structures by itself. And always it's the same structure or same protein. And actually this structure determines the behavior. And if a structure would be formed, your covalent bonding between these different parts here, of course, these amino acids, they are connected by covalent bonds. So this kind of chain, that's a very rigid. So this is kind of single molecule. But then you self-assemble to the correct form to operate. Then you have a sulfur, this kind of hydrogen bonds, van der Waal forces, high pi stackings. I think this is something which you discussed with Kaisa already. So these are kind of weak interactions what happen inside of your self-assembled system. And this is exactly because then it doesn't need a lot of energy to open. So if something goes wrong when you make your protein, then it can easily kind of open back and fold again to correct shape. If it would be covalent, it would never find a correct shape because it's a kind of a, or it might find a correct shape, but then it's permanent. You cannot open it anymore. And many times you need to open, for example, DNA, you need to open to replicate your cells and so on. And if you have this kind of, it's all this kind of how you make this self-assemble is coded in the molecule. So how this, what are the order of these amino acids? What are the bases in the DNA and so on? And if you have error in this coding, then you are in trouble, usually. This means that you have a disease such as a BSA, this is this mad cow disease, or Alzheimer, Parkinson's, which is all protein misfolding in the toxic fibers. So these are all due to errors in a coding, how you self-assemble your proteins or something else. There's even more worse, cystic fibrosis or Lafora disease, error in the DNA coding. So basically, these are all serious diseases. So this coding is really important. It makes everything happen in a living organism. But if we, so Gerrit is actually going to talk more about this, how the self-assemble happens in the nature and what are the rules in there. But now I take a little bit more physicist point of view and I want to use it something I would like to do. Who cares what nature wanted to do? I would like to do something. And this is, of course, sounds bad, but it's basically like that. And there's nothing harm, so we are not talking about any dangerous stuff here. But for example, if you take a DNA, so this is something I have used in my own research a lot, so that's why it was so easy to select as an example. So everybody probably knows, remembers, even you haven't done much biology courses, you still know from some high school or something what is the basic structure of DNA. So you have this double helix, which has this phosphate groups and sugars connected as a backbone in both of the strands. So this gray part here is a phosphate sugar backbone, and you have two of those. And in between, you have bases, which are connected together. And there's a four choices, adenine, cytosine, guanine, thymine. And adenine attached only to thymine, or A attached to T, and C attached to G. These are only pairs allowed. And this we can actually take advantage. So in a nature, everybody of us has something like a 3 meters of DNA in every cell. This is a huge amount. And they are all matching pairs. And they are kind of, even it's a 3 meters long, it's only 2 nanometer wide. So you can make a really tiny structure out of that and put in a cell. Actually, it's in a nucleus of a cell. So due to this base pair matching, it has kind of a, so this is called sequence recognition. So it only pairs with a other strand if it has a complementary sequence. So every base is matching exactly. So A has a T and C has a G on opposite side and so on. So you can take advantage of that. Another advantage of DNA is that there's a lot of kind of industrial standards made already. So it's really easy nowadays to isolate from biologic, and you can cut it by enzymes, exactly position you want. Sort DNA, so-called oligonucleotides, you can make a chemical synthesis and up until 100 bases, or maybe 200 nowadays. You have a polymerase chain reaction, PCR, which means that you have a single DNA, you put it in a PCR reactor, and soon you have millions of those. So you can copy it. So it's fast and easy to use, robust, and very sensitive, this PCR, so you don't need, okay, maybe not single is enough, but a few. Okay, but for PCR, you need to know the sequence for it to work. So that's a minus. And you cannot make PCR of a 3-meter DNA, but you need to. It works only for sorter. But in the 80s, there was this guy, Ned Seaman. This is a picture, not from the 80s, but a quite recent picture. So he's older. And the idea was this. You have a DNA double strand. So DS means double strand. So you have the helix. And just for simple drawing, I haven't drawn the helix here, but just the lines. So these are the two strands which are actually going around each other. But here, just drawn by like that. And they have a basis between them, matching each other. But now if you program those strands so that this red one, it finds a basis, matching basis from a blue one at this part. But from this on, there's no more matching basis in a blue one. So they don't pair. But you have here this orange strand, which has exactly matching bases for this part. And similar way, these orange bases here, they match the green one here, and the green one other end matches the blue ones. So here you always have a matching pairs, but this is the only way you can match the pairs. And since all physicists at least know, I know basically everybody of us know, everything is driven by minimizing the energy. Minimizing the energy of a DNA is to make a double strand, to have a base pairing. So system is automatically driven to that save, to make as much base pairs as possible. So this will self-organize in a solution. But it's not end of a story. So here you have this red one continues a little bit longer than a blue one. So there's a basis. This looks like a toothbrush here, but it means that there's a basis without pairs. At the only place where you can find a complementary sequence to this is here. But it's too close, so this doesn't bend. The structure doesn't bend so much that this could end up here. So what it happens is that it takes the next structure. Because of course you have millions of these in your solution. And they bend together here. And then the next one, and then the next one. Same also in a horizontal direction, these pins to this blue one, blue end pins to this orange end, and so on. So that's why actually these are called sticky ends. So they stick to the next block. And the structure here reminds very much of this so-called holiday junction, which happens when a cell is divided and you copy your DNA. Then this kind of junction goes through your DNA while it makes a copy. But in this case, the junction cannot move. It programmed so that it really doesn't move. You have to have a symmetric cases, so which you have if you have a dividing cell, because you copied the same DNA, so you have a same sequence, and this can move along the DNA. But here it cannot move. So this was the first idea in the 80s. Since that, there's another idea, so they make this kind of cube, which is out from a DNA strands. So everywhere here, you have a base pair matching, and this is the only way to make it happen. And then they invented this kind of so-called TX tile, which means triple crossover, because there's a three helices. And as you can see now, it's in a 3D picture. As you can see that your DNA is forming this kind of helical structure, but here, this blue one actually doesn't continue here, but it goes to this other helix and continues there. So they are connected at this point. Same way this brown one changes a helix here and changes a helix here. So this is exactly what happens in this holiday junction. If you would draw this in a 3D, it looks like that. So there's actually four different holiday junctions, and these three helices are kept together by these four joints, because the strands are going from one helix to another, and you have a backbone there, so they kind of knit it together, glue it together. And then here at the end, you can continue, for example, this blue one to make this sticky end, as in a previous slide. And you can combine, you can make this kind of a tile. So this is a symbolic. So this means these three helices with a certain kind of sticky end. Now the sticky end is made so that this sticky end matches sticky end of a tile A here, matches only to the sticky ends of tile B in this upper corner, and so on. And this lower corner of tile B matches only to the upper corner of a tile A. Okay, these shapes are just symbolic. You can easily mean that to see that this triangle goes only to this triangle hole, but it means that they have a similar complementary base pairing, so that only this other has exactly the same base pairing to form a basis here. If these bases don't match to these bases, they don't join. But if they match, they form a semi-permanent connection by hydrogen bonds. And you can make this kind of lattice when you put these tiles in a solution, mix them together. And here's an AFM image of this kind of lattice. So you can see it's already 1.5 micron long. So you can make really long. This is only 10 nanometer, this one tile. Yeah, about 10 nanometer. So this was kind of start. Later, Paul Rodemund, 2006, made even nicer idea. So all these images you can see here, they are single DNA molecules and forced exactly to that shape. So this is one of our smallest smileys and stars and whatever shape you can make. And the idea here is a little bit different. Basic idea is the same, that you take this kind of a long strand scaffold. It's called scaffold strand because it's kind of scaffold. And you imagine that you would like to bend it to that kind of shape. And then you take these kind of short oligonucleotides, so short DNA strands. So for example, this red one here, it only pairs to that point, but the other end of that pairs only with that point. So it kind of binds together this position and this position. And then you fill your whole structure with this kind of oligonucleotides. And this you do in a computer or drawing board. Usually you don't draw by hand because this scaffold has 7,000 bases. It's a big job to do by hand, but you usually do it by computer. And you just tell that you would like it to be like this, and then you can find out what kind of staple strands you need to make it happen. Of course, picture is a little bit more complicated than that. If you look in a 3D, you have a helical structure, and these kind of joints here, they are exactly these joints here. And of course, you cannot make this green one to go to the second, another helix, unless it's in a correct side. If it's in this side, you cannot make that to go to this helix. So you have to take care that your helix is also forming correctly, that you are not forcing it to some weird shapes. So you have to know where your strand is going. If you have a strand helix crossing here, you have to wait until it's in the other side and then you can cross here. But luckily, you know exactly how many bases is needed to change for one kind of a turn from this side to again to this side. So this is pretty easy to find out and program in a computer. And this scaffold is actually usually stolen from one bacteria because it naturally has DNA as a single strand form. So you don't need to strip it out and try to get away from the other end. So it's single strand form and you can easily isolate that. Then on top of that, you have these staple strands. So these are exactly called staples because you staple your scaffold to that shape. You can extend any of these. For example, you can make at the end of your scaffold strand, you can make this kind of hairpin. So it doesn't end here, but it continues something which doesn't bend to any of the scaffold places. So it sticks out and makes, for example, this kind of knot. Or it can just stick out and you can connect something else to that. And for example, here, they programmed these kind of knots to certain places, and then they fabricated the origami, and this is an AFM image of that origami. So you can really see these knots there, exactly the places you wanted. So you could easily think that you could use this as a nanoscale circuit board. In a circuit board, you put components in certain places, connect them. Here, you can put components in a certain places and make connections. And you can make it by self-assemble. So this is one of the examples. So they connected this kind of one staple strand was sticking out and there was a biotin that end. And then they connected to streptavidin. So biotin connects to streptavidin. That's a basic biological connection. Or you have a different linkers. So here you have a sulfur thiol groups making sulfur bond. This you can break by DTT. So they make this kind of origami with a lot of these connections. And then they put a DTT and notice that on these which has a sulfur bonds, they will fly away, these streptavidins. And then they have this different kind of bonding, which you can break by UV light. And these are the AFM images of the origami at the beginning. So you have these 12 avidins connected to the single origami. Then you put DTT to break some of them away. Or then you sign a UV light to break even more away. And always the reaction happens exactly where you want it to be. So you can make a biological program circuit to react certain signals. What else you can make is a cube container. So you can make so your origami now quantize these six pieces. So there's a one scaffold going along the whole structure. And then you have this usually about 300 different scaffolds, stubble strands. So this is usually the amount you need of stubble strands, 200 to 300. And it will self-assemble to cube. And this is a cryo-electron microscope images. How the cryo-electron microscope work, we will find in our last lecture. That's also a topic for somebody to make a student lecture. And these are 3D images of the from a structure taken by that microscope. And what else, it's not just a cube, but you can also open it. So it has basically you have your cube here below, then you have your lid. So you have a 3D view in a slide, but this is just a 2D view, easy to drop. And you have a key, or you have a lock. So let's draw it first in a closed form. Lock, and then you have a lid here. It is connected here, but here you have this key. So you have one strand here, another strand here, and they have a base pairing between. So they like to be together. So this is keeping your lid down. But it has end part here, where base is without pairs. Okay, now you take another DNA, which is exactly the actually a little bit longer than this one. And it has exactly complementary bases here. This means that this can make a base pair for all the bases of this DNA. And of course, what happens is that since this DNA on a lid, it can form, it can pair all its bases with this DNA. It kicks out the previous DNA and forms base pairs with this new one. Let's have a colors. Somebody has stolen the color. Okay, no colors. So this one will go here. And then this one is of course left here without any friends, without any pairing, and the lid opens. And if you are clever enough, you make this a little bit longer, as you can see. Then you can do the same trick. Now you take your DNA, if complementary to full that, and now what happens is that this DNA strand looks, ooh, I can pair all my bases if I pair with that. And you go back and these form a double strand DNA, which is just a copy. then you can lock your box again. By putting in this DNA and this DNA, you can lock and open your lid. And of course, this is, for example, drug delivery for cancer. So you can program your lock so that there's a certain DNA only at the cancer cells. So it can be that you have some really bad poison there inside and you just put it in your circulation. It's harmless because it's inside your DNA box. DNA is a natural molecule, it will survive. And when you find a cancer cell, it has a key and it will open and kill that cancer cell. Unfortunately, that box was very leaky. Nothing stayed in. So they made a little bit thicker walls in Helsinki later. In this case, you have a pH, what is opening and closing it, but this one will keep things inside. Also, this kind of DNA structure, so if you zoom in, you see that the structure we talked earlier, and it's here below also. So all of these are single helices. They are just drawn as a tubes, just to make a simple drawing. You can also fold it and connect them again. Now you actually have a thicker structure and you can make 3D structures out from a DNA. So here's a couple of first designs. This kind of a monolith or brick, and this kind of bottle, these are the TM images. Designing of that, you need to calculate all the bases in that structure. So here's a kind of a 3D structure for that in a design board. So now is this kind of a cross which combined together. And we can actually combine the methods. So this is a kind of a method we have developed here, that we make this kind of DNA assisted lithography. So we use DNA molecules. So this is a design. Now here's a plus and here's a, this kind of bow tie. And these are the AFM images of a single origami on the surface. And after the process, you can make a metal structures out of them. So basically how it happens is reminds exactly the lithography steps we had earlier discussed. So now you have a silicon under, you put your origami on top of that. Then you have a selective method, so you grow silicon dioxide only the places where is no DNA. So this is a CVD method. Chemical vapor deposition of silicon dioxide, selective one. Then you make an etching. So basically here you burn your DNA. It has done its job. And then you etch silicon under the silicon dioxide. So this is selective etching, chemical etching. Then you do the deposition, for example, evaporation, sputtering, for gold, for example. And it goes like that. So here it goes through the holes to the substrate. Here it stays on top of a silicon dioxide, which you then etch away by HF. That's the acid. So you etch away your silicon dioxide and the gold on top of that goes away. And then you do final etching of getting your silicon away and you have a metallic structure on a substrate. By this, you can turn the DNA origami, whatever shape it has, to a metallic structures on the surface. And this resolution is already much better than an electron beam. And you can do millions of these on a one chip with a one goal. So it's no more slow. Okay, there's also nanoparticles. So there's a biological nanoparticles, which you will talk later, bacteria, fungi, yeast, plants. And also you can make these metallic nanoparticles. We will talk about those in a nanophotonics lecture. So this makes chemical reduction. So you have a gold salt and you start reducing these gold ions to gold atoms. And then they collide together to make a nanoparticle. Okay, so this is a summary of a nanofabrication where we talked about UV lithography and whatever lithography methods, then filming, growth, etching, and finally about this kind of self-assembled bottom-up methods. And as I expected, we didn't have time to go to scanning probe microscope, but we will do that next time. Thank you. Any questions? No. Then we will end here. See you in a quick announcement. So there's now a place where you can return the essays from Nanoscience Days. And the deadline we put 2 weeks from now. So this means week before the next student lectures. So you should do this before. Please return 2 essays. There's also instructions. 1 to 3 pages. From 2. I hope you all had a nice Nanoscience Days. I liked especially talks on a Tuesday when I listened to everyone.